And he lovingly shook me by the shoulder and said, "You can't work for other people, and there's no shame in that. I'm going to go kicking and screaming, and how I look totally dictates how I feel. I'm shallow enough to admit that, to be honest with you. And there's power in that. Then you feel like it's a two-way street and not a one-way street. And when that happens, you turn listeners into fans or customers into evangelists, which is the business I'm in now."
I'm Rachel Coble.
And I'm Liz Dean.
Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts, from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation, so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy, and don't forget to like and subscribe. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our latest episode of Mock It. During this episode, we talked to Kate from Lately AI. She is the co-founder and CEO of an awesome and cool AI company.
Yes, Kate was your regular rock chick on the radio before she decided she needed to go out and do her own thing. We learn a lot about her background and the start of Lately AI, which is a Gen AI company that is designed to embody the voice, tone, and brand identity of its users. It's really cool. I wish I would have thought of it and made it. Sadly, I didn't, but we did get to talk to the person who did. So we really think you're going to enjoy this episode. And after you watch, don't forget to like and subscribe. I saw on your LinkedIn like bio that you love a good eye cream.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite eye cream right now?
Yeah. So I use, what is it called? It's over there. It's Environ is the brand. Ooh. And they have, I know, it's very good.
It sounds fancy.
And then I also use another company. I think it's called something Biologique or something French. Oh, who yes. knows? Have yeah. you heard of it?
But yes.
Recherche Biologique or some, I don't know. I see a girl. Her name is Maria Vera. So she just tells me what to do. And I bought a Lima laser. And those things are amazing.
Ooh.
So like, do yourselves a favor, like as advertised, it does it. I mean, I'm 50 people. I turned 50 in January.
I would not miss that. So I'm going to be writing down your eye cream. Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely stuff I need to work on. Like there's a gray hair right there.
Oh, I mean, I'm in my 20s and I was looking at them last night in the mirror. I was like, oh my gosh.
It just happens. I mean, I started taking Nutrafol actually last year because I was like,
nice.
No, you know, no, like I can't have gray hair, thinning hair, flat hair.
Like we can't have the trifecta.
Like, jowls and yeah, all of it at once. Like, and that's what happens is I was just talking to someone about this. Like, you know, people tell you all about your period and all that stuff. And, mm-hmm. but no one says, hey, by the way, sometime around 45 to 50, all this terrible shit is going to happen all at once to you.
Can't wait.
Yeah. It's just so it comes as a surprise. I was like, wow. So
I hate that. I also hate that nobody told me growing up that I thankfully wasn't a teenager who had a lot of bad acne. And then I hit like 23 and I got insane acne and had to keep going to the dermatologist and almost got put on Accutane. And I was like, this is not fair. I'm in my 20s. I'm going to go straight from Accutane to Botox. This is not cool.
Totally. And I think, I don't know, it's stress, it's hormones. Like, and if you have kids, like there's a whole other compartmental thing or, you know, I don't know, but it's growing old is not fun.
No.
And it doesn't, cut it.
It doesn't sound super fun, but I hope I grow old, but it doesn't sound enjoyable at the same time.
It's funny because like there is, so I was talking about the stress issue. Like so many things are out of my control that the one thing I can control, I feel like, is this to some degree. So like I train twice a day. I go for a walk once a day. Nice. Thank you. I intermittent fast. Like I just decided, you know, I'm going to go kicking and screaming, and how I look totally dictates how I feel. I'm shallow enough to admit that, to be honest with you. And there's power in that, right? Like when you walk in a room and you feel really good, I feel like I can do whatever I want, you know? And it's whoever, whatever your definition of feeling good and looking good is. It doesn't have to be some, you know, biblical definition. But for me, especially when I'm walking into a room full of white guys, older white guys, which is what it is a lot, you know, there is power in looking good.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel so much better when I put my, I work mostly from home, and the days that I don't look like this, most days, rough, I feel like I'm way less productive. But so did you always kind of do that, even when you were in radio? Because I feel like the joke is in radio, it's like face for radio or something like that.
That's
the joke.
It's true. That is the joke. So listener, in case you don't know, I had a former career in radio. Mm-hmm. My last gig was broadcasting to 20 million listeners a day for XM Satellite Radio right in Washington, D.C., over on New York Avenue. And I was there when I think they just built that metro stop. And so, by the way, there's a parking lot, a gated parking lot at XM. And if you didn't get in the parking lot, there's only 200 spaces and there were like 300 of us. Oh. I would call someone to come walk me in because it was so dangerous over there.
Ooh.
Right? This is like 2006, I guess, or something like that. 2004, maybe. But anyways, the face for radio thing. I mean, certainly there was at XM, I think there were like three or four women. I mean, there was no women on the air. There usually never are. And so that was definitely kind of weird. And then, you know, my radio voice is a little bit different than my normal voice. Because you learned to kind of do that stuff. But when I was in radio, for the most part, the internet like was just happening. There was no social media. You couldn't look up what people looked like or anything. So we were able to really lean into the theater of the mind. Mm-hmm. And for folks who don't know what that is, that's when your imagination fills in the blanks, because if you're listening, obviously you're not getting the whole kitchen sink. Your imagination has to figure out, well, or think of, like, it's like when you read a book and then you go see the movie and you're pissed off.
The book is
better. Yeah. Than the movie. Same idea. And I fell in love with that. I mean, we had so much fun. I was so lucky. The first radio job that I had in Vermont, at WNCS, it was these fun people that, first of all, we all got to program our own shows for the most part. Like, there was a guide, but you had a hand in it. It was live. So you would do overnights and just like fuck up a bunch before you got on, like, right. And I tried out all kinds of voices and different techniques, and oh God, some of it is so embarrassing. I still have, because I have cassettes of this, you know? And once in a while I do listen to them, but I was so lucky to be with people who, like, we would make up scenarios like that were not true because we're just messing with people on the air, you know, and stuff like that. And it was really super fun. And I got to understand, like, there's a real, and you guys know this from the show, there's a real, again, power. I'm into power apparently today, in being able to read a room that you can't see. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's a gift. It's not a thing that people learn. You either have it or you don't. It's like, you know, can you give good phone, basically, right? But if you're talking to 20 million listeners, like, you have to make people feel as though you're talking to them, that individual person, right? And that was my gift. And I was also a fiction writing major in college, and in radio, I figured out quickly that the only way to make any money was to be in the commercial side. So production is what they call it, producing, writing commercials, using your voice for drops to ID the station and stuff like that. And that was the art part, because then you get to create these soundscapes and everything. And I'd written hundreds of commercials. And so I started to see this parallel that we were talking about between listening and reading and the theater of the mind. And if I was doing my job well, so wielding the mic versus wielding the pen, you know that the listener slash reader is going to fill in that blank. So there's going to be this unknown component to your journey, to your story, to your time on the air. And you still have to get them to the right place. I'm still going to drive the ship here. But if I'm allowing you that role, guess what? It feels like you have an ownership in the journey, in the music I'm playing, in the conversation I'm having to myself, honestly, but to you, right? Right. And then you feel like it's a two-way street and not a one-way street. And when that happens, you turn listeners into fans or customers into evangelists, which is the business I'm in now.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh. How did you know you wanted to like transition out of radio? Because it sounds like it was something you were really good at and that you loved.
Yeah, it's a sad story, actually.
No. I'm a crier, so I hope it's not that sad.
It's not that sad, but I was, I don't know why I'm drinking a milky coffee during our show, but I am.
Hey, I have one too. It's okay.
Go for it.
It's got me, but it's my little treat. Like, so after I do my walk in the morning, then I can have a calorie bomb and this is it. Anyways, in radio at XM, I was at the best place. Everybody wanted to be there. I was at the show, you know, this is the job the whole world wanted. And I got it. And it was a sick building. Everybody was getting cancer, tinnitus or whatever it is. Like all these people were, it was so stressful. It was like a really terrible, hostile work environment. And if you were a woman, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Sexual harassment galore. Even I participated in it because it was rewarded as part of like this super boys club, and you didn't know it was wrong because everyone was doing it. But the hostile part I had never experienced before, and I couldn't figure out like, why wasn't I getting an A+ when I was doing superior work? And like, people were like actually out to get you. And like, I had this terrible boss who always said shit rolls downhill, which meant like he took it out on me.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And
boo.
it was so awful. Like all the sound booths, you know, these tiny, there's 100 of them probably. And we would go and record our shows because most of it was not live. Mm-hmm. And you'd be in there for hours and hours. And he would make me have meetings with him in these tiny rooms that are soundproof and down a dark hall, and then yell at me, like, you know, just take his day out of me. And so I started having all my body started reacting to it. I had a huge rash on my whole torso. No one could explain it for like a year. Then I fell down the stairs and I tore my peroneal tendon in my ankle, and I was in a cast for almost a year and a half because it kept being re-injured. And XM thought I was faking my injury so I could have a handicap parking spot, which was like insane.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And I was training. There was a trainer in the gym. There was a gym inside the building at XM. And so like I had been injured in my life a million times, physical therapy. And like my physical therapy told me to like work out with my trainer and do all these exercises. And they were like, we have you on camera. And I'm like, so what? I mean, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It was like really awful. And, this was terrible. And then I remember HR was accusing me of, I had to be doing all these doctor appointments, trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And I had panic attacks and suddenly I couldn't type anymore.
Oh my God.
Imagine this. Yeah. So like I had the worst pain in the world. It was epicondylitis and tendonitis, and no one would help me. So like this is a long story. Sorry, but
no, you know, I mean, I'm locked in.
Women need to know, other people need to know when something, this is wrong. And then if it happens to you, it's wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I was going to all these appointments trying to figure out what's wrong with me. I mean, I remember one, neuropathy kind of person at this hospital sticking like these long wires, like guitar strings down my arm through my nerves to find out if I have nerve damage. Ooh. It was so painful. Like, and I was doing East stuff, West stuff, like anything I could find. We could apply to get an intern from XM. And so I applied and they wouldn't give it to me because they didn't believe anything was wrong with me because look, I have hands. They aren't broken, right?
Oh my God.
So I paid an intern myself out of my own pocket. I made 50 grand, which was nothing, right? Yeah. I was eating ramen and 2-buck chuck because I discovered Trader Joe's because we don't have that where I'm from. Yeah. Back when it was 2 bucks. Remember now, I think it's 4. And then, so I was like literally telling this person to type for me. And then I found software. I found Dragon Naturally Speaking,
yeah.
Right? Voice activated software, which I have used for 12 years. Do you use it, Liz, too?
One of my old bosses legit broke his hand and couldn't type. So he would, I would hear him like, dictating press releases because he really couldn't type.
Oh, that's rough.
So yeah.
Me neither.
It was like 50-50. Well, I think they've improved as they've gotten
A lot. Yeah. It, you have to train it, you know, but and it's like learning a second language because there's different ways to, you know, boost it and everything. But yeah, my team knows because Dragon doesn't make typos. It makes sound alike typos. And so when you're my team knows this, if you just read it out loud, you can tell what I was actually saying, but like it'll call, it's called VC's feces many times.
Yeah. We would have to re-go through all of them. He would send them to me and then I would edit them like, you know, normal because I could type and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you would have these.
You need to put in like the commas and the periods.
Yeah.
No, you say that. You actually, well, you can put them, but I'll say it. So I'll, like when I'm like, sometimes I'll be working with one of my co-founders on a document and I'll start talking to him like I'm talking to Dragon and I'll be like, okay, yes, exclamation mark, spacebar, you know, whatever.
I'm going to start talking like that.
My team's going to be like, it's stop. Pretty funny. Stop. Full stop. Okay, I'll catch that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Smiley face. You know, you can say emojis. So anyways, I found Dragon and I was trying to teach myself and IT at XM wouldn't let me put it into my work computer because...
This company hated
whatever
you.
Reason. This was terrible. And then I had to buy a laptop and a credit card because I had to be able to take it around from home because I couldn't do any work. And I found this woman. There were four Dragon coaches in the country. Like no one knew this software. And she happened to be in Arlington, I think. And she took me to the Pentagon and she let me try all the stuff that people with disabilities try, like we called it the Bindi, which is like the mouse and you wear in your head and all this stuff. And I had no money to pay her, but she was a fan of my station. And I had all kinds of CDs. So I gave her like a couple hundred CDs and, her name was, I have a whole file. I forget what begins with a K. Kendra. No, not Kendra. Something like that. Anyways. And then eventually like I had a lawyer and I left XM in a kind of a blaze of not glory.
Good like, they for put a poster. You. I mean, leaving.
Yeah. It was I was out on workers' comp and like we were trying to sue them for sexual harassment, but nobody would stand up for me. I couldn't get anybody to corroborate my story. Gosh. And like, I was too young too. I didn't know that these things were wrong. So I didn't know to save them or mark them down, you know, which is kind of weird.
Especially in the early aughts. Like nobody's talking about it.
Yeah. Me too didn't exist. Like none of this, like somebody had to tell me this is a hostile work environment. I was like, what's that? You know,
like, not every job is like this.
Anyways. What I loved about, so that's why I left radio. Because I physically couldn't do it anymore. But the irony, right? So the irony that I use Dragon Naturally Speaking, I mean, I talk for a living, guys. Like I have a Sennheiser mic here, a nice one, because like this is what I'm still fucking doing. But what this is the important part of the story. So I essentially was crying all the time. I was in pain. I'm terrified. I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't even go get a job at like the grocery store because I can't use the cash register or you know what, whatever. And I started to get better with Dragon and I got another job in a music company that was another boys club is the same thing. And my dad one day just had it with me and he
like dads do
like they do and he lovingly shook me by the shoulder and said, you can't work for other people and there's no shame in that. Those were his words. So he got me on two things. Number one, of course, there was this other possibility. My dad owned his own business, my mom owned hers. It hadn't occurred to me. But the shame was another thing, because that's what had happened is I thought this was all my fault, right? Mm-hmm. I thought I had done something wrong to disappoint my male boss, right? Yeah. I thought it was me. And that's the tape that always runs. And it still runs for me today. Like it's my first inkling always is like, what did I do to cause this, right?
Yeah.
This, a lot of women do this by default, I find. And then a bunch of stuff happened in the same week. My then boyfriend, now husband, heard my dad and he's so kind. He went to the Barnes & Noble because that's what you did then. And
I saw don't go to Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble. There you go.
Yes. and so the book was Guy Kawasaki's Art of the Start, which is a famous book. You know that book?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's everybody knows that book. So I started reading it and it's like right in the first or second chapter, he says, don't make a plan, just get started. And I was like, well, I don't need this book, obviously. So I chucked the book. And then this is all the same week. I was also reading this, I call it a barf of a book, The Secret. Do you guys know that book?
I don't.
The Secret.
Is it good?
It's terrible. Oh, no, gosh. Don't read it. I'll tell you the secret. Yeah. It's terrible because it's super cheesy and like it's a self-help book.
Oh, I don't do well with
the
those.
Moral. No, me neither. But like I was trying everything in my power. Mm-hmm. Like I got it. This is not working, you know? So the moral of the story is this, the secret is not a secret at all. It's a mindset. And so if you walk around with a mindset like, you know, I can do this as opposed to I hate my fucking life. I'm in pain all the time. Right. That's not bad. That's not going to get you anywhere. And it occurred to me in this moment that I had played softball. And I don't know why I also played soccer and a bunch of other things, but I thought of softball immediately. And I thought, well, how do I feel when I hit a line drive? And I feel like I fucking rule in that moment. That's how I feel. I don't feel like I'm terrible. I suck. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what was coming out of my mouth all day long. And I smoked and I was really good at smoking. And so like, I was just this toxic, toxic ball of fire, you know? And, then that week, two clients wanted to not mail, but hand deliver me a product for this job I was at, which is unusual because they were fans of mine at XM.
Ooh.
And it turns out that they were, angel investors, these two great guys, Scott and Al, and they gave me $50,000 to start my first company.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
When you cry.
Power of connections right there.
It was marketing. You did a marketing agency first, correct?
I don't really talk about this, but what we did was a widget. So back in the early days of the internet, there were these things called widgets, people, that were like tiny web pages that would sit on top of a web page. So now it's kind of like, if you pull up a clock on your desktop or calculator or something like that, that's a widget.
Yeah.
But they could live anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. And so our widget was two songs a day and it was a new song and an older song and they fit together for a reason, which is how I was programming on the air also. Like that's another long story we can go down. But anyways, it was called The Daily Dose and my company was called Outland Dose Media. I'm a huge Andy Summers fan. Mm. Andy Summers is the guitar player for The Police. I like short guitar players. I married one.
Hey, you got to try people out of time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. He's just hot and bothered. And you know, the love of his life is a blonde named Kate. And I did meet him and he was fucking kind of mean to me at first, but then I said, you're my Keith Richards. And then he was nice to me.
We all love an enemies to lovers tropes.
That is one of my favorites.
It's one of my favorites too.
Outlandos Media had The Daily Dose and that was doing really well. Like we had like 6,000 listeners and I wasn't monetizing it. And I didn't know anything about startups or software or anything. Yeah. Like I kind of was learning how to code, but somebody else was coding it for me and I just kind of did. And I got all these people to work for me for free, like my old DJ friends to help do some songs with me. And like, it was fun, but it was just kind of this crazy endeavor. And then, my aunt was the principal at the National Disability Institute, which is in Washington, DC. Mm-hmm. And she had this really unique gift of pulling together nonprofit, for-profit, and government entities and getting them to collaborate.
Oh, icon. That's a hard thing to do.
For real. She really is this incredible woman and had this great, great sort of thing going on. And they had Walmart involved in a project that was about empowering the poor to lift them out of poverty through income tax preparation, EITC credits and financial education. And Walmart had a vested interest because many of their employees live below the poverty line. And the National Disability Institute, so 54 million Americans, most of them also living under the poverty line. And it was Bank of America, this is the boring part, AT&T, the IRS, Goodwill, United Way Worldwide, all these huge companies working together. There were about 20,000 marketers over 3 years across all of their local entities, all of, there were, you know, every, there were banks, there were colleges, there was libraries, like all these people were participating in free tax prep. And it was unsexy as hell, right? Talk about disability and tax prep. I mean, it's not, the acronyms are from hell. and as you can imagine. And so she was like, listen, this is a big project. You're really good at marketing. I need someone who's smart to sit on all these calls. There's a lot of calls and I, you know, I can't be everywhere at once. So I was on my first couple of calls and, you know, guys, I'm not very polished. You've met me for a half an hour here and you know this already. And I don't know what I said in that first meeting, but I'm sure it was met with some eye rolls. And I went home. I probably swore. I hope I didn't, but I might have. I went home and I just started organizing what I understood the project to be in a big spreadsheet. And before I knew it, I had like two dozen tabs going down tens of thousands of rows. And I was just organizing everything from like, okay, well, whose social media channels are there from all of those entities, you know? And then what are those people doing? Oh, there's YouTube videos. What are we making? What is the content? Oh, there's press releases. What, where are those? Who's getting them? And then I could see all these redundancies, obviously, but I could also see things like, well, the messaging that we used in this newspaper ad in Salt Lake City did really well in this zip code. So why don't we try that messaging on Facebook and see how that does and aim it at that same kind of location or something. And I was right. And like I could see.
Were you doing this all by hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. This is 2012.
My brain does not work this way, but I'm glad there are people in the world who do this. Like you.
It was so Twitter had just, I mean, MySpace, I think, was just barely dying. Twitter had just started. Like this is early, right? And we got Walmart to agree to a social media campaign, I remember. And anyways, so this spreadsheet system I developed got the project 130% ROI year over year for the 3 years I did it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Good old spreadsheets. Right? My husband, who's an accountant out there, is like, woo!
Yeah, exactly. And like, what's interesting though, is like, I was looking at those words, like if words work here, why can't they work here? And also, what is working with the words? Like, why are these the words that are serving this social post well, or this blog well, or whatever it was? And that is sort of how we get to lately, right? So mm-hmm. I'm in the business of getting people to do what you want them to do with words.
Yeah.
Right? That's what all communication is about. Take out the trash, buy my shit. Do your homework.
Exactly.
You know. And so that long story. Then a friend of a friend, at this point I had a small agency when we changed the name to Outlandos Media from Music to Media. And Outlandos, by the way, is the name of one of the police's records, Outlandos d'Amour, which is a made up word. Well, Amour isn't, but Outlandos just means like outlaws of love is the phrase. Nice. Like outlaw. And I fancy myself a wild beast, you know?
Can't be tamed.
Can't be tamed. Yeah, exactly. Can't be employed. And a friend had knew about my spreadsheets from the Walmart project and said, you should really meet my friend Steve. And so I started to meet Steve, and Steve came from venture world, from software world. And before I knew it, he was like, you know, we just need $25,000 and we can automate your spreadsheets. Yeah. And we'll make some wireframes. And I didn't know these words. What's a wireframe? Like, you're going to automate my spreadsheets. Don't touch my hands off. Don't touch my spreadsheets, you know? And 25 grand, like you said, like I was eating ramen and two buck check, and we were about to buy our first house. Like that's where my savings was going. And I was like, you're crazy. And he pulled that money out of his own pocket and hired Jason, who's now my co-founder, who had worked for Steve previously. And they came over on a Sunday night after Christmas. So it was holiday, 8 o'clock at night. I had two glasses of wine and I was pissed. I was like, fuck off. I'm on vacation, you know?
The best time to make decisions. Two glasses of wine and after Christmas. Yeah.
I know, right? I'm like, get out of here.
You're either in a great mood or very overstimulated.
Yeah. You know? And anyway, so they showed me the wireframes and I was like, oh, I get it. And then I got beat up for 10 years and was punched in the face every day since, it feels like.
Do you still feel like you're getting punched in the face?
Yes, I feel terrible. I really do.
Do you ever feel pressure that you've been in this Gen AI space for so long and now a ton of people are talking about it, especially with like things like ChatGPT and you talked about all the time? Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Like you have to educate everyone around you about how they're not going to lose their jobs if they're a writer, or that it's not going to take over the world a la iRobot or whatever.
My fear.
Yeah. I mean, the pressure, you know, we were too early is the answer. Nobody understood what we were doing and we didn't even understand it. We didn't set out to build an AI company. Mm-hmm. And we actually didn't even know we had built AI. And one of our mentors pointed it out to us.
I love that. And,
yeah. It was pretty, like, my CTO, Brian, is wonderful. And we got a grant from IBM Watson at that time. Fancy. So we could go. Yeah. So we don't anymore, but we had an integration with Watson and learned a lot then. And then another investor was really excited about the AI and said, I'm going to work for you for free. And I'm going to introduce you to my friend Kai Gui, who's an AI genius, and let's double down on this. And so luckily we agreed to take that turn, but we had set out to automate my spreadsheets. Like, so we had built this really robust kind of marketing organization platform, again, not very sexy, but really valuable. And it was hard for us to sell that at the time. And we were trying to sell it to SMBs too. So we built an enterprise product, but we were selling it to SMBs. And, you know, marketing is hard. People don't understand it, as you know.
Yeah.
and so that wasn't really working. And then, I don't know how long you guys want me to go on with the story, but in 2020, a bunch of stuff, there's always this coalescence of events, you know, which I find is interesting in life when, like for me anyways, when major change, it's just like, how many signs do I need to see at once? You know,
I just also can't believe that 2014 was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me want to throw up a little bit.
I know. It's so crazy. Like, because I had just, I wrote on, actually, I should sort of read this to you because it's so, I think, apropos, but I was, you know, LinkedIn reminds you when your anniversary is of whatever.
Yes. And also just on this topic, I force myself to read my Facebook memories every day just to humble myself. Because I had Facebook when I was like 13 and the things I would put on the internet, I read it just to remind myself who I am and what I've,
where you've come from.
Good for you. I totally had to delete that stuff because it was like not CEO appropriate. It's truly
humbling every day. Like I will write something and be like, wow, I am a writer. And then Facebook will be like, yeah, well, you wrote this in 2012. So.
That's hilarious. Little self-check there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so here, I'll read you guys what I wrote. Like, so I wrote, 10 years ago, I launched Lately.ai. Yesterday, I turned 50. That's a decade of AI, pitch decks, sales decks, so many decks, pivots, podcasts, shame, joy, denial, bus trips to NYC, starting up smoking again, quitting smoking, flights to San Francisco, accelerators, spotting time wasters early on, hitting revenue goals, missing payroll, identifying patterns, iterating, crying, not dying, glad handing, zooming, celebrating, self-blame, introductions, no weekends, making friends with total strangers across the globe, working, vacations, cohort analysis, hotels, parting ways with some, fortifying relationships with others, panic texts, virtual high fives, eureka, disappointment, perspective, and lost sleep. It's been the most fascinating, exhilarating, and exhausting decade of my life. 50 sure as hell is nifty.
Oh, I love that end. It's so good. You forgot to put in there that you also survived, your company survived a whole pandemic.
The whole pandemic. I know. Like, it was so, well, so that time, so here we are, like 2020. It was actually, in 2019, we got into an accelerator in San Francisco mm-hmm. with Jason Calacanis, who's like kind of a big deal. And This Week in Startups is his podcast. And so now we're feeling like we're in the big leagues here. So I'm going to fly on a plane to San Francisco every week, once a week for, for 4 months. Okay. And remember, I don't get any work done on a 6-hour plane ride because I have voice activated software, right? Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it done because I'm terrified of flying, so I just sit there paralyzed. But
Well, you could have talked to me. We would have been. I would have distracted you because I couldn't do any work. You know, I can't type.
Look at you guys seats next to each other.
Yeah. I met a lot of people, which like I don't like to do that. Like I like to be really efficient and get shit done. So it was torture. Twice a week, I'm like doing nothing all day long, basically. You know, reading a book or something, and. Anyways, and you were going out to do pitch. You're doing basically a pitch competition, more or less. So like you're on stage, rewriting your pitch each time, which that takes work. And you're doing it in front of a bunch of white guys who are going to fucking rip you apart, which is what they do.
My nightmare.
Yeah. It feels terrible. I mean, it was really stressful. And we came out of that. I was about to close a fundraising round. I couldn't close it because all my meetings got canceled because it was COVID.
Yeah.
March 2020 and COVID.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It is March. Yeah. It's March right now.
It's March.
4 years ago.
And I had one term sheet, but it was awful. And nobody wanted to follow on with it. And it just, the terms were bad. And the guy was such a douchebag. He totally was like, this body doesn't happen on its own. That's what he told me. I know. Anyways, and then so many stories. So I took out a loan from, I have got a really loyal investor, Adam Gross, who's been, he's so great. Sometimes he does yell at me and I need it. Sometimes I yell at him back, you know, but he intimidates me, to be honest with you, but he's always loyal. And he loaned us 50 grand because it was a weird time. And I was just like, I don't know what the hell is happening, but like, I need to make payroll and I need to go hide. It was such a stressful thing. I need to go hide in the sand, and everybody wanted to Zoom cocktail with me. And I Zoom for a living, you know,
Zoom
right? I hated that. I'm like, I don't want to Zoom with anybody. Fuck off. Like, this is great. I get to be alone. Great. You know, that's what I want. And so I stuck my head in the sand and watched the Kardashians for like a week. And then my co-founder was like, hey, have you seen the bank account? And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, there's more in it than when you left. And I was like, what? And the reason
was...
going
to be like, oh, we need to get back to work. There's no money.
Yeah. Well, we grew the company 240% in monthly recurring revenue in COVID that year.
Wow. Do you think it's because so many people were like, oh my gosh, I can't hire people to do these like content jobs or social media jobs. I just don't have the money right now. So they're all trying to do it themselves.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big part of it because we were still selling to SMB, by the way. But also we introduced video, which we were only
the rise of TikTok text. In 2020.
Yep. That was really big. And I'll tell people what Leetly does later, but, and then two other things happened. A guy, you know, called Gary Vaynerchuk did an experiment and used Leetly to start an entirely new Twitter channel. Mm-hmm. Actually Jim Thompson, who worked for Gary, who's my friend now, did it for Gary. And we got Gary a 12,000% increased engagement.
That's crazy.
And now I could just, instead of trying to tell people what we did, which was hard, we didn't know how to say it at all. Then I could just hold my phone up and show them Gary's feed, you know?
Nice. It's nice. Like a little end feed case study that you could usually show
Vanna
people.
White
yeah.
right there.
Yeah. It was so funny because there's occasionally people who, especially women, who don't know who Gary is. And I'm like, he's the Oprah for men, you know?
Could have, like, Oprah ruined my bachelor viewing on Monday, so I have beef with Oprah right now.
Oh, I'm glad. Fan. Let's just talk about something. What is wrong with the grammar on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette? It is not Joey and Mai's apartment. What? It's Joey's and mine.
Like, I just take everything that happens on that show with a grain of salt.
There's every year, I'm always amazed at how people get that wrong. They're like,
I'm amazed at a lot of things that happen every year.
A lot of things. But that one really just gets me all the time. He's like, they're like, cause it's so, the rule is you just say your own, you say yourself and that's how you know.
Yeah.
So it's my apartment.
Yeah.
So it's Joey's and my, right. Or what's the other one that they'll say? Like,
you and me go like, or like Rachel yeah, and me go. Just, it should be Rachel and I go, or me yes, and Rachel go. You. Rachel and I, oh, I picked that up on sitcoms and I'm like, come on guys, like everyone's watching you.
Yeah, we don't need to be morons. Like, I mean, already, like we just grunt at each other with emojis. Like, we just
I would anyways. Still watch The Bachelor if all it was them grunting at each other, to be honest. It's the only trash TV I religiously watch. And this season has been so delicious. Joey.
Maria. I'm a Maria fan.
I'm a Maria fan. She's the only one of the season so far that I've followed on Instagram because I'm like, yeah, girl. They tried hard to make her a villain. And I was like, no, she's the people's princess. You can't make her a villain.
She's the people's princess.
Are you going to bring up
Dude,
the cake conspiracy?
I wish you guys lived near me.
It's one of the best things that's ever happened. I started watching.
My husband, like, leaves the room immediately.
Does he ever stand behind the couch though and like watch? That's
for a
mine.
Second, but then and I get so mad because he'll make some comments and I'm like trying to listen. I'm like, can you just shut up? You know, like pause.
I need to hear what Joey says.
Yeah, I want to see him cry some more. That weenie.
Yeah.
Sorry, he's kind of weenie.
I love him. My best friend's obsessed with him. She was like, I'd be his mistress if he picked someone on the show.
If he wanted, he's really nice
a
though.
Side
but like,
piece, I'll be it. And I was like, girl,
it's a side piece. The crying though, I don't like. I'm sorry. Like,
he's
I don't.
Very
it's
emotional.
Okay for men to cry, but like, I don't.
He
I don't
is
know.
The most emotional of the bachelors for a while.
Yeah, I don't like. I like that my man doesn't cry. Sorry,
he doesn't really either.
So hold on, let me finish the story because it's important.
Yeah,
so,
backtrack.
Okay, back to me. Okay, so sorry. Gary Vaynerchuk did his thing. As you pointed out, COVID is happening. People are trying to figure, everyone started a podcast suddenly. You know, everyone's trying to market their stuff.
Wow. You know,
yeah, there, hey. Whoa. And then, then two other things happened, which is, so like I said, my Uber power is turning listeners into fans or customers into evangelists. And so we live this at Lately from the inside out with our, how we treat each other, my employees. I can't tell you how many times they've volunteered not to take a paycheck. I mean, it's obscene, honestly. You know, thank you, Jesus. but then like, also we would do that with our customers as well. So there not a day has passed since March of 2020 where somebody hasn't spontaneously written about us on social in one way or the other. Right.
That's awesome.
Yep. So that happened. So like we look like a $15 million company on LinkedIn or wherever, because people are always talking about us. And then the other thing that happened and the reason this all happened is because we started to what's called dog food or your own product. So that's like drinking your own champagne. And so Purina was tanking and then they did a commercial where like somebody's dog from an employee's dog ate the product on the camera and loved it. And then that's how they sold, but that's dog fooding. Anyways. So we only use Lately to do all of our marketing. That's about to change. Cause I'm raising a round right now finally, and I'll have money to spend. But, so it works. This is what Lately does. Lately studies everything you've written on social for about a year. And we're looking specifically for two kinds of patterns. So like Rachel, when you write something and it works, you know, we can see a baseline of good, bad, whatever. What goes into that? What's the DNA? So I can see the patterns of your sentence structures, the words that you use, the ideas that are in those messages. I can even see the characteristics of the content. Is it a link in an image, video and text, whatever. And so now I can see the high performing patterns. And then the second thing I can see is when your unique target audience clicks, likes and comments and shares your content, what's going into that? What are the words that make them do that, for example? So this is called your unique model at Lately, and it learns in real time all the time. And we are not a layer on top of ChatGPT or anybody else. You asked about the pressure around that. So like we're sitting pretty here because this is my own model that we built, right? And all of your data stays private because we're not actually, it's your data. It's your analytics. I'm just putting my math on top of it, right?
Love that.
That's really good. And so now that I have this model, we give you, the human, multiple opportunities to course correct and analyze the model, because, by the way, that's the only way AI learns. If you're not doing that with ChatGPT, you're basically throwing a rubber duck at everybody, you know, like it's just garbage.
Gives you the same 10 sentences over and over yes. and over again.
Yes. And they're totally irrelevant. Like they, you know,
it loves the word realm. With you. For some
realm.
Reason.
Yeah. So hilarious. Yeah. I know. It's just it's crazy. My husband wrote me a Valentine from AI. It was really funny. Anyways, so with the model, now you feed it long form content. So you could put this podcast into Lately, which you will. My girl Emma is going to ask you for this podcast.
Perfect.
Lately's going to transcribe the podcast, and it's going to read the transcript with your model. And it's looking to match up parts of the transcript in the model, lift them out, lift out the quotes is what it's doing. And then it's also going to lift out either the video or the audio of this podcast and match the quote. So now you have a little teaser of something wonderful that you or Liz or I said. And then it's looking for kind of non sequiturs, because it doesn't want to say, listen to this podcast with Kate Bradley Turnus that nobody ever knows. They want to instead say, like, you know, hostile work environment gone wild. I don't know, something like that. Like, it's looking for sexy bits to pull out, something interesting, you know? And it does this with text, like blogs, newsletters, press releases, any video, webinar. So, like, I do this. I'm on your podcast because I'm going to use it. I'm going to take this. Lately's going to generate a couple dozen posts for me, more actually, but that's how many I'm going to use. I'm going to drive all the traffic to a link back to your website, wherever this podcast is going to live later, and give it back to you. And guess what? You're going to reshare it every time I do, or thank me, because I put your name in lights, right?
Our AV person in the corner is probably like drooling. He's like, yes.
There you go.
He's
that's what we do.
He's like, yeah.
It's so easy. So it's like super win-win love. And because, since we started dog fooding our own product, that's how we've been able to like create this flywheel of fans. And that's how we generate all of our customers. So we have a lot of inbound. We convert at a rate of 98% from trial to sale. And we're able to reach the customers that we want because it's doing itself on us, right? It's looking for my unique target audience. So we pivoted to enterprise recently, which has been fun.
Doesn't sound super fun.
Sounds like some sarcasm there.
Some of it is fun. It's hard. It's not hard, but it's different. And like here, what's interesting though is we're doing the same kind of marketing more or less, like because the users are the same, whether it's who's your guy in the background? Is it Chris? Did you say?
Craig.
I had the C. Craig. Hi, Craig. So whether it's Craig or like my friend Jonathan at Philips Electric, like you're all online because you have to be on social for your job. It's your job. Doesn't matter what size company you work at, right?
Yeah.
And if you're smart, you're looking. Smart people are looking to get a raise, right? That's what they're thinking about. In order to get a raise, you want to make the company more money. That's what you want to do. The lazy people are just thinking, I just want to save time so I can go eat lunch early, get my job done and not really care about it. And that mind shift is changing, as you pointed out, Rachel, because now that everybody's cottoning on to AI is really just automation.
Yeah.
That's what it is, right? It's not actually intelligent. Sorry.
No, I love that. It's dumb.
It's dumb. And it requires the smart ones, you know, us to like help it out and get the job, not only just get the job done, but like to make the evangelist. Like this is why I'm in the business I'm in, you know? So anyways, all that stuff happened and then the shit hit the fan and I cried some more and
you sound just like me. I cry all the time.
it's so funny. Like I, you know, when people are like, it's not business, it's personal. And I just think that is a crock because, you know, it is
everything
personal.
Is personal.
Everything is personal. Yeah. And certainly there's some stuff you have to learn to just like let it roll by, you know, I mean, if I had a heart attack over everything that actually triggers a heart attack, you know, I would have died a million times already, you know, but like, I remember I was trying to teach my husband this, like a couple years ago, it was in COVID actually. I just remembered, or it occurred to me that the to-do list is always going to be there and it is always going to be overwhelming. I'm not going to see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's just not happening. So I have to figure out a way to change my perspective of, you know, how I'm taking that in. And that's why I train twice a day. That's why I go for my walk. I do my meditation when I go for my walk. Like I do this so I won't kill myself or somebody else, you know?
I love for that because I'm the same way. I think in adulthood, that was the thing that always stressed me out was there's always something you have to check off. Like you put off paying that bill and then you pay it and you're like, well, I'm done. But then something else gets added onto your to-do list that you don't want to check off, but you need to check it off. That was hard for me to get over.
Good for you. it's still hard, you know, like you can't, that sometimes I just give up and I just say, I'm going to the gym. I can't even deal with this. Like I can control that scenario, you know, and
at least that's a healthy coping mechanism. I'm like, I can't control this. I'm going to McDonald's and getting ice cream sundae and a Diet Coke. Because that's what I do.
That sounds great.
That does sound great.
Might get one today.
Well, guys, I think I've like talked your ear off.
No, that's okay. We want to respect your time. But thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we've learned so much about you and I've had a blast. Yes, I hope you had a blast.
I love you guys. I super wish you lived down the street so we could watch The Bachelor together.
Because, like, Batch Watch Party. It's so fun.
Yes.